From 1888 by Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov, the Russian Easter Festival Overture. That was Robert Spano and the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra. Stay tuned for Schubert and Tchaikovsky. We'll have a little bit more Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov right after the 11 o'clock news. It's about 10:25 and a half right now, and 52 sunny degrees in Lawrence ahead of a supposedly very rainy weekend. Support for classical music here on Kansas Public Radio comes from the Cider Gallery, a unique gallery space featuring works by local and regional artists, open Fridays 1 to 5 and by appointment. Details at cidergallery.com. And from the Lead Center, hosting comedian Lewis Black in Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, the final tour. Tomorrow, 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available at lead.ku.edu. Here is Alfred Brendel playing three impromptus for piano, the music of Franz Schubert now on KPR.
Thank you.
We've heard three of the impromptus by Franz Schubert with Alfred Brendel at the piano. We'll hear some great piano music in the next hour with Chae-Yoon Park. She's the concert pianist featured with the Topeka Symphony tomorrow in a famous piece, maybe Grieg's most famous, the A minor piano concerto. Chae-Yoon Park soon. She's warming up across the hall in the studio. We'll hear her play and hear more about that concert. Well, next on KPR by Tchaikovsky. Here's a wonderful part of the Nutcracker score, The Waltz of the Flowers, on Kansas Public Radio.
Thank you.
The Waltz of the Flowers from Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker here on Kansas Public Radio. Herbert von Karajan's Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra. We'll have an exciting piece in just a few minutes after the news that'll open the Topeka Symphony concert tomorrow night, and their pianist is warming up. We'll hear her play as well, Chaeyoung Park. You can get the scoop at topekasymphony.org. And if you ever wonder about classical music that we play, and if you want all the key signatures and opus numbers, just go to our website, kansaspublicradio.org, where we keep the playlists running.
Irish writer Bram Stoker wrote the vampire novel Dracula, but years before that came out, he wrote a ghost story, Gibbet Hill, that was lost for more than a century. That is, until someone recently found it.
Immediately called each other, I think probably swore more times than we ever have collectively on a phone call before, because we immediately thought, this is huge, this is global.
I'm Ailsa Chang. More on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Find out more about that. That should be interesting. Be listening at 3 o'clock when All Things Considered starts. Support for classical music on KPR comes from the Bach Aria Soloists, presenting Bach Unlocked, a concert and insights with Bach scholar Dr. Christoph Wolff. It's Friday evening, November 8th at 7:30 p.m. at the Village Presbyterian Church in Prairie Village. Tickets at BachAriaSoloists.com. Good morning. We're KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence, KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia, KANV, KANV HD1, Olsburg Junction City, and KANQ Chanute. Support for news next on Kansas Public Radio comes from the Topeka Zoo, presenting the 5th annual Zoo Lights beginning Friday, November 22nd, with new light sections, appearances by Santa, and fun for all ages. Tickets available now at topekazoo.org. It's 11:01. Good morning. This is Kansas Public Radio from KU.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. U.S. employers added far fewer jobs in October than forecasters had expected. But as NPR's Scott Horsley tells us, today's tally from the Labor Department was likely distorted by an ongoing strike at Boeing and by hurricanes that rock the southeast.
The monthly jobs report shows U.S. employers added just 12,000 jobs in October, which is far below the pace of previous months. But the news comes with some important qualifiers. A drop in factory jobs, for example, was almost entirely accounted for by the Boeing strike, and hurricanes Helene and Milton likely put a dent in job growth as well. The storms made landfall shortly before the jobs tally was conducted. The unemployment rate, which is less subject to those temporary distortions, showed no change in October. It remains a low 4.1%. Analysts do think the job market is gradually cooling. Wages are not going up as fast as they had been, although wage gains are still outpacing inflation, giving workers a real boost in their buying power. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Garbage references loomed over campaign events last night. NPR's Tamara Keith recaps reaction to a Trump surrogate's offensive joke last Sunday calling Puerto Rico garbage.
This was front and center at Harris's rally in Las Vegas, where she was introduced by Jennifer Lopez, who is Puerto Rican. She said it wasn't just Puerto Ricans who were offended that day. It was every Latino in this country.
But former President Trump says he loves Latinos.
Trump is still working to win Latino voters, too, and his campaign believes that he's made real inroads. Trump is also trying to take back the garbage narrative after earlier this week, President Biden appeared to say Trump supporters are garbage before clarifying that he was talking about the comedian's bad joke.
NPR's Tamara Keith. During a Trump event on Halloween, some supporters donned black trash bags. In Spain, rescue and recovery efforts continue following Tuesday's flash floods. The storm has claimed at least 205 lives. Parts of the country remain on high alert. Here's NPR's Miguel Macias.
Just days after a storm that has become Spain's deadliest natural disaster in living memory, images from the affected areas continue to shock Spaniards. Hundreds of cars piled up in narrow streets, towns entirely covered by mud, trucks stranded on blocked highways for days. More than 300,000 remain without access to drinking water in the region of Valencia. Communications are heavily disrupted, with nearly 50 miles of railway completely destroyed, according to Spain's Transport Minister Óscar Puente. Prime Minister Pedro Sánchez visited the area yesterday to meet with local officials and emergency services. The army is mobilizing 500 more members from its emergency response unit to join the more than 1,200 service members already on duty. Miguel Macias, NPR News, Seville, Spain.
The Dow is up 475 points. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Progressive. Progressive Commercial Insurance protects small businesses from retailers to tradespeople. Progressive covers a variety of business needs with a range of coverages. More at ProgressiveCommercial.com. We're live, we're local, we are Kansas Public Radio.
Yeah.
Music by Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov. We've just heard The Procession of the Nobles. That was the Bochum Symphony with Otmar Maga directing. You can hear that with the Topeka Symphony tomorrow night. It's much more enjoyable when it's done live. They'll also be doing the Grieg A Minor Piano Concerto, and the concert piano soloing with them will be Chae-Yung Park, who is here in our KPR Live Performance Studio. Let's hear some live piano music. Here's Chae-Yung Park now on Kansas Public Radio, playing the Dame Myra Hess arrangement of Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring by Bach, now on KPR. That was the Myra Hess arrangement of that beautiful flowing melody by Bach, Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring. As we're listening to pianist Chae-Yung Park play in the KPR Live Performance Studio. She's kind of grown up here on KPR. She used to come play for us when she was a very promising little girl. She's Lawrence person. So she's played internationally now. She's just had a concert tour, and she's soloing with the Topeka Symphony tomorrow night. And the conductor of the symphony, Kyle Wiley-Pickett, is here. Good morning, Kyle.
Good morning.
Yes, I'm so glad that you picked Chae-Yung Park as a soloist.
Oh, I'm just thrilled. And, you know, this is a return to the Topeka Symphony for her. She was a young artist competition winner at the Topeka Symphony probably just right before I came on board. So I'm excited to get to work with her and to have a former young artist come back as a fully fledged professional musician is marvelous.
Well, she can do it all. She's an excellent soloist. She plays with great feeling. She's wonderful with chamber music. And here she is doing a concerto. It's not new to her. She first played a soloist with a piano with an orchestra when she was 14. But we're enjoying listening to her solo playing. Let's hear Chae-Yung Park again on Kansas Public Radio. Here are a couple of the Opus 32 preludes for piano by Rachmaninoff, played by Chae-Yung Park.
Thank you.
Some dreamlike music by Rachmaninoff. We've just heard two of the preludes for piano from Opus 32. Here on KPR, played by Chae-Yung Park, pianist who will be soloing with the Topeka Symphony tomorrow night. And next is an interesting piece that comes from a set of pieces that's about 2 hours long by Messiaen, The Kiss of the Infant Jesus. And this is deep religious mysticism that Messiaen described himself as a composer, an ornithologist, and a theologian. So this is a bit mystical, religious music by Messiaen. Let's hear Chae-Yung Park play The Kiss of the Infant Jesus live on Kansas Public Radio.
Thank you.
That's amazing. A piece full of visions brought to life by pianist Jae-yung Park. That was by Olivier Messiaen. It was called Kiss of the Baby Jesus from a set of 20 contemplations. It's just amazing. You know,
I was going to say, wow.
Yeah, it's just speechless.
Yeah, just fantastic. You know, one of the things that, just in case people have just tuned in, I always like to remind, this is live right here in the studio. This is Jae-yung Park, the soloist this weekend for the Topeka Symphony. And when you have a magnificent artist and terrific audio engineers, you might think if you're tuning in, it's just listening to a professional recording. But this is happening right now, right here. And watching that live was spectacular.
I can see why. You know, I could hear the bird calls in it.
Yeah, you know, I've been, my entire career has been in music, and I'm always kind of, I marvel at the fact that I've never heard this played. I don't think I've listened to a recording of it, and I've never heard it done live. And there's so much music out there to get to, you know, even though it's my daily life, to hear new music to me is magnificent. That was a marvelous piece.
Yes, it's a sort of piece that it doesn't really make any sense if it's not played well. But that was played well. That just really created a whole atmosphere.
You know, the way that Jae-yung played that and the way that it was written by Messiaen, I mean, it's kind of it turns the piano into a full orchestra, I think. In many ways, you can hear so many different voices at the same time, and what a virtuoso showpiece that was.
Yes, that was amazing. Yeah. Well, she is going to play another fascinating piece by Ligeti, music about the dangers of power over wisdom. But before she does, let's talk a little bit about the concert tomorrow.
Yeah,
we're talking with Kyle Wiley Pickett, the conductor. Now, you'll start off with the piece that we started off this hour.
Right, The Procession of the Nobles by Rimsky-Korsakov. That's just fun. Yeah, it was a great fanfare march, just an exciting opener. And then we'll go into the Grieg Piano Concerto, the A minor Piano Concerto with Jae-yung. That has to be one of the most requested piano concertos, one of the most requested pieces I hear about from audience members. People love this concerto. I mean, you know, there are a few that are sort of on the top, Rachmaninoff and Tchaikovsky, but the Grieg is one of those, and for good reason. I mean, it's exciting, it's thrilling, and it is just full of spectacular melodies. It really is. You and I were talking right at the top about whether this was Grieg's most famous piece, and I think probably still Peer Gynt, at least in the Hall of the Mountain King, you know, maybe more known. I play it on every kids' concert because kids still to this day know and love that piece. But this has got to be right up there, I think, as far as Grieg's output, and certainly one of his most fun pieces. And then on the second half of the concert, we are playing a monster symphony. Dmitri Shostakovich's 10th Symphony, which was written in 1953, right after Stalin died. It kind of liberated Shostakovich from he was really under the thumb of Stalin. You know, most artists, most people, to be honest, in the Soviet Union were. But Shostakovich especially had a relationship with Stalin where he was just constantly in fear of his life and would sort of alternately, you know, without any effort. I mean, he would either make Stalin terribly angry or terribly happy, and he never knew why or what was going to set him off, and several times thought that his life was in grave danger. And so when Stalin died, it just freed him up, and he wrote this massive, it's an emotional roller coaster. I mean, it's a symphony that's very much in the model of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. It's a darkness to light kind of symphony. Starts with, you know, fury, and there's a movement that's a representation of Stalin, or at least the impact that Stalin had on the Russian people. And then, you know, moved on to the triumph that they felt when they were free of this tyrant. But it's a magnificent symphony. And it's like the Messiaen, like what we just heard, it's one of those pieces that experienced live is very different than listening to a recording. You feel it as well as hear it, and you see it because you can see the different sections of the orchestra as they have to kind of come alive at these various moments. And when I've played this piece before, audience members say, I've never seen the orchestra have to be so, you know, it's almost like they're dancing in their seats as they're trying to play this piece. So it's going to be a fun concert.
Well, it's good programming with the time change coming, because as we're going into more darkness, it can be a really challenging time of year for those dealing with depression. And, you know, there's just less light. People are depressed around the holidays. But this symphony, it just sounds so uplifting. You start in darkness.
You do.
With the oppression, yeah. You know.
And then it moves.
It just moves comes
through.
Alive.
It really does. And, you know, one of the things that I love so much about Shostakovich, he's a 20th century composer. You know, has to be one of the most important of the 20th century composers, at least for the orchestra, for sure. But he uses the instruments in a way that is just so fun and exciting to listen to. And then he also has gifts with melody. I mean, you know, there are, one of the things that people get concerned about 20th century music is, am I going to be able to hum anything? You know, is anything going to sound like a melody? And Shostakovich, there's melody through and through. There's power, and there are times when it's about the rhythm. There are times when it's about the sound and the clashes of sound, but there's always melody. And the solo instruments, especially in the wind section, a solo clarinet will play, solo oboe will play, bassoons will play in a section. Flutes have these great melodies. You're going to really be able to focus on and hear the extremely, you know, talented professional musicians that make up the Topeka Symphony in featured roles in this.
It's catchy and it's uplifting, and
yeah.
It sounds like a great choice.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, let's go back to the last piece that Chae-Yung Park will play for us. This is the music of the Hungarian composer Ligeti, and he wrote a set of etudes, and this is one of them, and this is called, I think he must have read Goethe's poem, this is called The Sorcerer's Apprentice. Chae-Yung Park, pianist.
Thank you. That's amazing, too. I've never heard that before. That was Ligeti's The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
A little different than the Dukas Sorcerer's Apprentice that was used in Fantasia, but actually the same mood in some ways. That was spectacular.
It was. Chae Yung Park, thank you so much for coming to play for us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really nice to be back.
Now, I just was wondering, I just have one question about something you played. That Messiaen, the kiss of the baby Jesus, did you learn that with a teacher or did you teach yourself that?
I have actually been out of school for the last year and a half. So that's one of the pieces that I just learned on my own this year.
Wow, that makes it even more amazing. Now, also, I know ever since you were little, you've probably heard the Grieg A minor piano concerto.
Yes,
did you ever think, I'm going to play that someday?
I dreamed of playing it one day, and I actually did learn the first movement when I was very young, like probably 10, 11, something like this. But I never got a chance to play with the orchestra, so it's really special to be able to play with the Topeka Symphony.
Well, I'm so glad that you have the chance to do that. You had your triumphant lead center recital, was that this year or last year?
Last year.
Yes, that was wonderful.
In February, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm really glad that even though you've moved on to this international career, that you're not forgetting us back here in Lawrence and Topeka.
Never, never.
Okay. Well, could you do us a favor? Could you just play for us just the first four measures, I think, the opening flourish? Yeah.
What a way to begin a concerto, it really is. And, you know, it's what's interesting to me about this piece is, as Chae Yung said, a lot of really talent. I mean, you'd have to be really talented. Not, you know, I studied piano all the way through. I didn't learn the Grieg first movement. But a lot of really talented young pianists will learn that first movement for high school level concerto competitions. But really, the whole piece, I mean, the second movement and the third movement are also, they're just glorious
movements. They are,
movements.
Absolutely.
And so I'm curious for you, you know, what's your favorite aspect of this particular concerto?
It's very interesting, as you just said, that like I had first experience with it when I was very young, and then now coming back to it as more of an adult, I am just noticing how extreme the markings are in this piece and the range of emotions that he tries to cover. Everything from the softest and most intimate and most introspective of the moods and dynamics. And then he gets very quickly into like fortissimo with like three Fs and just really grand and extreme sort of writing all the time. And there is everything from like lyricism as well as like dance in the last movement, of course, and this sense of almost timelessness in the second movement and also nobility when the theme we're playing together, the orchestra, and the cadenza in the first movement. It's also extreme, like wildly written. Yeah.
Grieg, being Norwegian and being sort of a nationalist composer, probably would not like to hear this. But, you know, the first movement, there's a lot of Tchaikovsky in there. I mean, you can hear that in that opening fanfare. The second movement always strikes me as being kind of Chopin-like. Do you feel that when
definitely
you're playing it?
With the flourishing, like right-hand writing and, yeah.
And it stretches up over the top and there's all this rubato and it's just, the piano just kind of sings the way I think of, for Chopin.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. It's such an exciting piece and I wonder how it compares to other concertos you've played with orchestra. I know you've done, I mean, you did Mozart where you actually conducted from the piano.
Yeah, that was a really cool experience.
Which is a very different kind of
absolutely,
piece.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that was my first year at Juilliard of several years ago. I had an opportunity to conduct one of the movements of Mozart's K414, which is a beautiful piece. And it's actually funny that you mentioned Tchaikovsky just now because last week I was playing that piece. And so I definitely hear the similarities in the writing and the extreme sort of nature of it and the expressiveness and the romantic style.
Is there, for you, is there a difference in endurance? You know, I was going to ask you about the endurance between solo playing and concerto playing, but that Messiaen, that has to take enormous endurance. I mean, is there much difference for you when you're playing with the orchestra versus when you're doing, you know, when it's all you?
I think concentration-wise, it's all the same. That whether I'm playing solo or concerto or even chamber music, maybe slightly less so chamber music, but still the concentration has to be there fully, you know, all the time. But maybe physically, of course, it depends on the piece, but something like Tchaik or something like Grieg, it is definitely going to require a lot of like back muscles on my end.
And, but, you know, even in that Ligeti I watched you had to jump from the very bottom of the keyboard to the top. Mm-hmm. I mean, your body, you had to kind of leap over to get to those keys. I mean, it's kind of amazing to see that. But with Tchaikovsky, I know, and a little bit with the Grieg, you have to put your whole body into
absolutely, that. Absolutely, absolutely. And I need to project enough where I will stand out in a sea of 80 people playing their hearts out. So I, the dynamic range basically comes up a bit from just the solo style of playing. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Is there, you know, on this, just this little set that you played for us right now, you know, Bach, Baroque, of course, a very romanticized version of Bach for the piano that Myra Hess did, Rachmaninoff, which is incredibly romantic.
Yeah.
The Messiaen, which is 20th century, but also very romantic.
Very much so.
In many ways.
Yeah.
And even Ligeti. I mean, is there something, what do you gravitate toward in your repertoire?
So actually, this selection of pieces that I just played this morning comes from a whole, like a larger program that I've been playing this year. And it's funny, like a couple of weeks ago, I ran into a friend in the hallway and he asked me what I'm playing these days. So I shared, and his response to my program was that, oh, that's a very you program, and, which was a very funny remark and also a very accurate one, because I think I've noticed that I have a tendency to gravitate towards very programmatic pieces and also pieces that have like an emotional, very emotional sort of highlight and climax. And these sets, when I play the whole program, it's also paired with Franck Prelude, Chorale, and Fugue, which is also like religious sort of writing, and it's also aspiring towards something, you know, greater than just everyday life. There is this feeling of transcendence. And I really gravitate towards that kind of music where, I want to express, and I want to aspire towards this feeling of just something that takes you out of your daily life.
You know, every single one of the pieces that you played here had a singing line, right? Where you're bringing out a singing line under a lot of, I mean, even the Ligeti, there was a singing line
absolutely.
In there. Certainly the Messiaen, where we heard the same basic melodic motif over and over again. In the Rachmaninoff, you know, of course he's famous for that. He does it better than just about anybody. Mm-hmm. But and the Bach too. And that's one of the things. So how does that work for you? You're great at that, obviously, with the solo repertoire. With the concerto, it's almost like the orchestra gets to be the obbligato and the piano just sings, right, in many places?
In many places, yes. But, I mean, with orchestra, with concertos playing, I still treat it like chamber music. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is, I mean, unless there is that connection and response and listening on both sides, it's hard to make a piece come together because you need both. It's not just me that's important and orchestra secondary, not at all. It's equally important.
Yeah, there's a
collaborative
real
role.
And especially this concerto, there's a lot of dialogue in that. Well, that's just wonderful playing. You know, so one other question that I had is this also strikes me a little bit as a almost like a competition set. Are you doing the competition circuit still, or are you? Because it feels like the kind of program.
Oh, really?
That would
That's
work
interesting.
Really well, in you know, Van Cliburn kind of competition.
No, well, I haven't been doing competitions in the past year, just because I have been fortunate to given be given more performance opportunities. We'll see about next year. You can be ready. Yeah, you can look out for my name.
Yeah, right.
Well, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
I know you're very busy. And the concert is tomorrow night at 7:30. It's not sold out yet, is it, Kyle?
Right. No, you can still get tickets. You can get them online, and you can certainly get them at the door. But I would say, you know, once again, this is one you don't want to miss.
Yeah. Will people have a chance to thank you or chat with you afterwards?
Absolutely.
Oh, that's
my
cool.
One of my favorite parts about the performances.
Well, thank you, Chaeyoung Park. And thank you, Kyle Wiley-Pickett.
Well, thank you. Thank you for, you know, letting me bring soloists over to the live studio. This has just been wonderful.
Yes, it is. And thank you also to our two engineers, Jason Sloat and Chuck Smith, who set up. They're the broadcast engineers, and luckily we are making recordings of these. All the music so far that Chaeyoung's played has been live, but luckily we'll have those.
You'll be able to go back and watch it later on YouTube.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, just wait a few days and we'll have it up on YouTube. And thanks also to staffer Jeff Watson. And I'm Cordelia Brown. Let's hear some music by Handel next on Kansas Public Radio.
music from The Faithful Shepherd, the music of George Frideric Handel, here this morning on KPR, Kansas Public Radio. Montalto Motion Picture Orchestra on Kansas Public Radio playing The Show Off.
We are in the final stretch of this historic election season. Former President Trump and Vice President Harris are making their last big push before it all comes to a head on November 5th. I'm Scott Detrow. Join us for live special coverage of Election Night 2024 from NPR News. We will bring you the latest as the polls close and with the context and analysis you need to stay informed.
You can hear it right here on KPR from NPR. We have some American pieces in the noon hour. Henry Cowell's Hymn for Strings, Horatio Parker's Trio. We'll go even farther during classical music from noon to three on KPR. We're KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence, KANH, KANH HD1 Emporia, KANV, KANV HD1 Olsburg Junction City, and KANQ Chanute. Support for news next on KPR comes from the Noto Arts and Entertainment District of Topeka, inviting listeners to the Dia de los Muertos Festival today, featuring the Celebration of Souls exhibit. It's on loan from the Chicago Field Museum. Details at explorenoto.org. And from Delta Dental of Kansas, reminding listeners that dental health is closely linked to overall health and to visit a dentist regularly. Dentists can be found at deltadentalks.com/find. It's 1201. It's KPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The final monthly jobs report before Election Day reveals a gain of 12,000 jobs in October, sharply lower than what was widely projected. The factors include two hurricanes that rocked the southeastern U.S. and a massive strike at Boeing. Michael Regan is a senior editor at Bloomberg with an assessment of the impact of today's report in the run-up to the election.
It really looks like we're hitting that proverbial soft landing that economists talk about, where the Fed's been able to contain inflation and while not really doing much damage to the job market. You know, that said, the election is next week. Politicians don't usually have a lot of nuance when they talk about the economy, so this report certainly could be a talking point, and already is a talking point on the Republican side.
Michael Regan speaking to NPR's Here and Now. Open enrollment starts today on healthcare.gov, otherwise known as Obamacare. NPR's Selena Simmons-Steffen reports 21 million people bought their insurance this way in 2024, and even more could sign up for next year.
This year, premiums are $10 or less per month for many people, and there are lots of plans to choose from. That's a big turnaround from the early years of healthcare.gov when there were few and expensive plans. As enrollment in the Affordable Care Act marketplaces has set new records during the Biden administration, the number of uninsured Americans has dropped dramatically. Secretary of Health and Human Services Javier Becerra tells NPR that after this year's open enrollment,
I have no doubt that we'll see another record set of Americans who have health care coverage.
Open enrollment runs from November 1st until at least January 15th for everywhere except Idaho, where enrollment starts and ends earlier. Selena Simmons-Duffin, NPR News.
The death toll from flash floods in eastern Spain has risen to 205. The figure is expected to keep rising as the search for unaccounted people continues today. Israeli military airstrikes continue to kill and injure dozens of Palestinians across Gaza, according to the Gaza Health Ministry. The Israeli military says it's battling Hamas fighters. NPR's Hadil Al-Shalchi reports the Israeli military is intensifying its assault on Gaza.
Women wailed at the Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza as they searched desperately for their loved ones. Rescue teams were clearing rubble to reach Palestinians stuck under the damage after a deadly Israeli airstrike hit the camp. The Israeli military did not immediately comment on the incident. NPR's Gaza producer Enes Baba spoke to Ramil Habil, who lost his wife in the attack. There were no wanted men in the room she was killed in at all. She was innocent, he said. Aid groups are warning that very little aid, including medical supplies to treat the wounded, is reaching Gaza. Hadil Al-Shalchi, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
From Washington, this is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Arm, with the new podcast series, Tech Unheard. Arm CEO Rene Haas talks to tech company leaders like Jensen Huang and NVIDIA, who are working to help shape the future of computing. Available on all podcast platforms. We're live, we're local, we are Kansas Public Radio.
Stardate November 1st. To look at a modern calendar, you'd think the early Romans couldn't count very well. Today, for example, is the first day of November, the 11th month of the year. But the name November means the ninth month. The name is a holdover from the earliest Roman calendar, in which the year began with March. The start of the year was moved to January, a century before the time of Julius Caesar. He affirmed that order when he set up the basic calendar we use today. But the names of the months remain the same, even though some, like November, no longer made sense. In the modern calendar, November 1st is just another day, but to the ancient Celts, it marked the beginning of a new season and a new year. Summer ended on October 31st, when the cattle and the sheep were brought in from the pastures. Winter and the new year started the next day. That day was called Samhain. The Celts lit bonfires to help out the sun, which was growing colder and more feeble as the long nights of winter approached. Because it was like a crack in time, a dividing line between both seasons and years, Samhain was a time when the souls of the dead were thought to roam free. Families opened tombs to release friendly spirits and brought them food and other gifts. And people wore masks to hide themselves from evil spirits. Many of those ancient customs have been incorporated into the modern-day celebration of Halloween. We have skywatching tips and much more about the universe in Stardate magazine. Details at stardate.org. For the University of Texas at Austin MacDonald Observatory, I'm Billy Henry.
Support for Stardate on KPR comes from Bowersock Capital Partners, a woman-owned and managed financial management firm with deep Kansas roots. Sanctuary Securities, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services through Sanctuary Advisors, LLC, a registered investment advisor. the music to start this noon hour off with from one who was a leading figure of American avant-garde music for the first half of the 20th century, music by Henry Cowell, and a hymn for string orchestra, played by the City of London Symphonia, conducted by David Amos. I'm Jeff Watson, glad to welcome you into classical music here on a Friday afternoon. Things continue on with some American pieces. Later on, the Toledo Trio has a suite from one Horatio Parker, early 19th century composer who hailed from New England, followed by the Second Cello Concerto by the great Victor Herbert. That's all just ahead here on Kansas Public Radio. Thanks very much for stopping by. The Orchestra of Radio Luxembourg is next. We have something for you by French composer Edouard Lalot that was created in 1879 based on a few earlier violin pieces by Lalot that were put together using Norwegian folk tunes. They call this the Norwegian Rhapsody on Kansas Public Radio.
Thank you.
There we heard the Orchestra of Radio Luxembourg, conducted by Pierre Kao, in the Norwegian Rhapsody from 1879 by French composer Edouard Lalot on Kansas Public Radio. The time is 12:25. American classics are on the way, including in about 10 minutes, the Eastman Rochester Symphony, with a second cello concerto by Victor Herbert still to come today on KPR. Support for classical music on KPR comes from the Midwest Trust Center at JCCC, presenting the What If Puppets in Shiver Me Paintbrush, A Pirate's Adventure in Art, December 6th and 7th, created with a neurodivergent audience in mind. More at jccc.edu/mtc. And the University of Kansas, transforming students and society through academics, discovery, service, and spirit. Information about the possibilities of a KU education is online at ku.edu. At the KU campus, it is 59 degrees on our way to a high of 62, with sunny skies, clear tonight, a low in the mid-40s. Rain is in the forecast. We have an excellent chance of showers starting tomorrow afternoon, 80% chance of showers for Saturday. Next on KBR, we're in the company of the Toledo Trio, for music by an American composer born in 1863, who hailed from New Haven, Connecticut, one Horatio William Parker, who got his musical education in Europe, as was customary in that time, and came back to become the Dean of Music at Yale University and was famously the teacher of Charles Ives. Here's a little bit of Parker's chamber music, a suite for violin, piano, and cello on Kansas Public Radio. Suite for piano, violin, and cello by Horatio Parker, played by the Toledo Trio on Kansas Public Radio. The time is 12:36, and at the top of the hour, NPR News. We're live, we're local, Kansas Public Radio's 91.5 Lawrence, 89.7 Emporia. Always online at kansaspublicradio.org. Thanks for joining us on a Friday afternoon. Tomorrow morning on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Brian Jordan Alvarez, creator and star of the new FX comedy series English Teacher, discusses his role in plays Not My Job. We'll bring you the less stressful side of the week's news, that's on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, tomorrow morning at 10 on KPR. Support for classical music comes from Bob Schwartz Financial, Kansans helping Kansans achieve their financial goals for over 45 years. More information is available at bobschwartzfinancial.com. Some more American music, and we bring you now something by the great cellist and composer Victor Herbert, who was a great composer for that instrument and also a great producer of operettas and Broadway hits that premiered from the 1890s up until the start of World War I. His music nowadays is not very often played, but the exception to that is his second cello concerto, considered a standout in the repertoire. And we have it for you next, Howard Hanson, conducts the Eastman Rochester Symphony with cellist Georges Michel on KPR.
Thank you. Thank you.
Cello Concerto No. 2 by Victor Herbert, played by the Eastman Rochester Symphony Orchestra, led by Howard Hansen, and our cellist was George Mikkel. Just about 1 p.m. and NPR News on the way. Classical music continues in the next hour, where we have a suite known as Bids for the First Day of November, music of Arnold Bax, coming up on KPR.
Irish writer Bram Stoker wrote the vampire novel Dracula. But years before that came out, he wrote a ghost story, Gibbet Hill, that was lost for more than a century. That is, until someone recently found it.
Immediately called each other and I think probably swore more times than we ever have collectively on a phone call before, because we immediately thought, this is huge, this is global.
I'm Ailsa Chang. More on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us for All Things Considered today from 3 to 7 at your place to find NPR News. We're live, we're local, we are Kansas Public Radio. KANU in KANU HD1 Lawrence. KANH in KANH HD1 Emporia. KANV in KANV HD1 Olsburg Junction City. KANQ Chanute. K210 CR in Atchison. And K258BT in Manhattan. And always online at kansaspublicradio.org.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The Trump campaign's encountering more backlash over his remarks about targeting, quote, enemies from within. Most recently, what he said about former Congresswoman Liz Cheney, daughter of former Vice President Dick Cheney. Republicans who are both backing Vice President Harris in this election. Trump's team says a GOP nominee was expressing his view that Liz Cheney wants to send young people to war despite never having fought herself. But as NPR's Sarah McCammon reports, Cheney is pushing back.
At an event in Arizona, Trump criticized Cheney and her father, former Vice President Dick Cheney, for their support for the Iraq War. Trump described the former congresswoman as a radical war hawk.
Let's put her with a rifle standing there with 9 barrels shooting at her, okay? Let's see how she feels about it. You know, when the guns are trained on her face.
In a statement on X, Cheney said, quote, "This is how dictators destroy free nations. They threaten those who speak against them with death," and warned that Trump would rule as a, quote, "tyrant." Sarah McCammon, NPR News.
The final monthly jobs report before Election Day shows the hit 2 hurricanes and a massive Boeing strike made to the economy. The Labor Department says the economy gained 12,000 jobs in October, sharply lower than what was widely projected. And with the disruptions, the participation rate was down, so the jobless rate held at around 4.1%. KPMG chief economist Diane Swonk looks ahead.
Over the next couple of months, there may be some lingering effects in the month of November as well. But once we get around to December, we'll have a more clear picture of what the underlying employment report situation is, which we know from a variety of reports is still very solid.
The economy remains prominent on the campaign trail as Vice President Harris and former President Trump deliver their closing arguments in swing states. Today, they include Michigan and Wisconsin. Now, as we reported, the strike figured into today's jobs numbers. Machinists at the aircraft maker Boeing plan to vote next week on yet another contract offer. NPR's Joel Rose reports the union's leadership is backing the latest proposal to end a weeks-long strike.
Boeing has once again improved its contract offer to the machinists union. The latest proposal would boost wages by 38% over 4 years, along with a $12,000 ratification bonus. Union leaders are endorsing the latest proposal. In a statement, they say it's time to, quote, lock in these gains and confidently declare victory. Union members voted down 2 previous proposals from the company. The strike, which is approaching the 7-week mark, has halted production at Boeing's factories in the Pacific Northwest. The union, which represents 33,000 workers, will vote on the latest proposal on Monday. Joel Rose, NPR News, Washington.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up more than 300 points, or roughly 0.75%. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Fisher Investments. Fisher is committed to helping clients stay on track to reach their financial goals and enjoy a comfortable retirement. FisherInvestments.com. Investing in securities involves the risk of loss. We're live. We're local. We are Kansas Public Radio. They are the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra and conductor John Elliott Gardiner, easing us into the 1 p.m. hour of music with the Prelude Pastorale, Pastoral Prelude, from French composer Emmanuel Chabrier, here on Kansas Public Radio. Good to be with you once more. I'm Jeff Watson. Music continues on, and for the first day of November, we have a special treat for you coming up later, a tone poem of great majesty and beauty called November Woods from Arnold Bax, the Ulster Orchestra, has that performance for us a little bit later down the line. Classical music continues on a Friday afternoon. Support for classical music comes from the Law Office of David J. Brown, LC and Lawrence, working to help individuals, small businesses, families, and non-traditional families with legal and estate planning needs. Located at 120 East 9th Street in Lawrence, and the Raven Bookstore, independently serving the local community for over 30 years. The Raven Bookstore is located at 809 Mass Street in Lawrence or online at ravenbookstore.com. Next on KPR, we're going to get into some exciting chamber music and take in work by composer Reynaldo Hahn, a Venezuelan composer born in 1875 in the city of Caracas, although it would be just as fair to call him a French composer as he lived in the city of Paris for most of his life and was at a very young age, at the age of 11, admitted to the Paris Conservatory to study under the masters of Charles Gounod and Jules Massenet. What we'll listen to next is music he wrote in 1921. This is a brilliant, dramatic, and extremely energetic piano quintet in F-sharp minor. Next on KPR, we'll listen to the Parisi Quartet with pianist Alexander Tarot on Kansas Public Radio.